Welcome to the Marketing Commute, a podcast that explores the roads taken and the lessons learned by truly world-class Australian marketers. I'm Mike Boyd, and joining me on the commute this time are Andrew Baxter, Board Director, Senior Advisor and Marketing Columnist at The Australian, as well as Carmen Becker, Partner at KPMG Australia and Leader of their CMO Advisory Practice. In this episode of the Marketing Commute, I'm very lucky to be joined in the studio by Peter Hayden, Executive General Manager of Operations at Australian Pork. Peter's had a very long career working client side with food and beverage in the UK as well as here in Australia, and we'll chat to Peter a little bit later in the show. Okay, team, what's caught our eye this week?
Well, I think it has been a big weekend of footy finals just gone, and I think there was a, you know, always the people arguing about was the NRL ratings bigger than the AFL ratings and all those sorts of time. And the first time that obviously the AFL had done a nighttime final, that seemed to work pretty well for the broadcasters. I think 1.5 million Melburnians watched it from their home TVs because obviously they were still in lockdown at that point in time. But it was, I think it was a pretty good spectacle with what they were able to do. And I think also it's always good to see some decent ads this time of the year that drop into those. It's a bit like our Super Bowl. You usually see a few new campaigns drop, and I think one of them we'll talk about a bit later.
So what I noticed was something a little different, a dinner party conversation starter. Poor old Fred Perry, so beautiful brand, started as a tennis brand in the UK and has moved into becoming this sort of far-right symbol. They've most recently been seen as being worn by the Proud Boys, a favourite of Trump's, who are wearing the black and yellow T-shirt as a symbol of membership to this Proud Boys club. And it's kind of this far-right anti-establishment movement. And now this T-shirt has become a little bit of a subversive type brand throughout its whole career, I guess, as a shirt. Started as a tennis shirt, but moved quickly into anti-establishment, moved into the neo-Nazis. So as a marketer, what do you do about that? It's quite an interesting brand conundrum. You know, do you embrace it? Yeah. Do you move away from it? Do you take it off the shelves? How do you actually fight against that? I mean, their decision has been to take the yellow and black one off the shelf. Is that the right decision? Are there other things to do? So if you're thinking of something to talk about at the dinner table this weekend, that's one of them.
There's so many different ways you can skin that, isn't it? It's just very, very, very challenging. Listen, something I saw out and about, and it's funny, I only saw it on the way coming here to chat with Peter, was I see Coles has got a new brand positioning out there called Value the Australian Way, and like a lot of other brands at the moment, hopping on that bandwagon of, you know, we're all in this together and, you know, look inward, not outward, and here we are as Australians, which I think is interesting. What do we think about that?
There's a few others pushing into true Australian values at the moment as well. I think it's a time when, as we're moving out of COVID and we're getting more freedom, people are trying to look back and see what did we relish in 2020 and what things were important to us. So we're seeing that the new Commonwealth Bank campaign also came out just last week. That's also leaning into, you know, Australians can and the Australian values, and again a testimonial campaign. So it's interesting, they're pushing into similar feelings and that we must be feeling. They must have got that through their research.
Now, it's great to have Peter Hayden, the Executive General Manager of Operations at Australian Pork, on the show today. Australian Pork is a producer-owned organisation which supports and promotes the Australian pork industry. My little conflict here is that I'm the chair of Australian Pork. But it'll be a great conversation. I mean, Peter's a really, really experienced packaged goods marketer and has been for many, many years. He grew up and attended university in the UK, had honours in business studies before joining Kraft in the late 80s. Went on to work for a couple of the other good packaged goods organisations in food over there before coming to Australia with Lion Nathan, and that was the sort of the halcyon days of beer marketing and beer advertising, so I'm sure we'll tap into that. Ended up heading up marketing at Cerebos and then became the general manager of marketing at Australian Pork in 13 years ago. And more recently promoted into the EGM of operations role. So really excited to have Peter on the show to discuss his journey in the world of marketing. Welcome to the Marketing Commute.
Thanks, Billy. Good to be here.
Now, we always love going back, and you are, you know, obviously grew up in the UK. You're a proud Australian citizen as well now. But what got you kick-started? What was the interest in marketing?
Well, so to be honest, when I first started thinking about a career, I was 13, and I actually wanted to be a teacher. And my mum was a teacher, and I looked at her career and thought, actually, you don't earn very much money. So I looked to be an accountant, and I was pretty good at maths, and I went through all of the what you need to do to be an accountant crikey, that's dull. I'm interested in the making money bit. I'm just not interested in the counting it bit. And then I got a school circular, which was from the Institute of Marketing. Actually, that looks like a good combination of creative and logic, or creative and maths. So I followed that and went and did business studies at what's now De Montfort University.
It's very interesting that you saw a marketing circular. Something came round from the Marketing Institute that was encouraging young students, 16-year-olds,
absolutely,
to go into marketing.
At 15.
That's something we need to have a chat about, I think. We need to... Get that happening in Australian schools, just to get the next generation excited.
Well, not many, even in Australia. I mean, you think about the first marketing degrees were really in the 1980s.
Yeah.
That's when the first marketing degrees were set up. David Syme Business School in Melbourne and a few other places.
But as you pointed out, I'm really old, and I actually did it in the 1980s.
So in a career like yours, there's sometimes a moment, or often a moment, or maybe there's many moments where you felt your career really kick and escalate or change direction in a really positive way. What would be that moment or those moments for you?
So there's probably two or three, but the first one was a bloke called Richard Lace offered me my first marketing job at Kraft. And in like any of the FMCG companies, there's a million people that want those jobs, and it really is a lottery. It can't possibly be to do with skill. But getting offered a job at Kraft, it's kind of like winning the lottery. Like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Kraft at the time, maybe Cadbury. If you got one of those, you knew your training was going to be good. So that was definitely one of the big ones. The second thing, I think, was the first time I saw a new product that I'd been responsible for on the shelf.
Wow. It's like, it's
not just doing forecasts of SKUs and getting shouted at by people because you're out of stock. That's not all of marketing. You know, there's actually stuff which a consumer can pick up and enjoy. And probably the most fulfilling bit was Lion Nathan and Synths, where my role wasn't really to do marketing. My job was to be responsible for the people that do the marketing. And I was really fortunate at Lion Nathan. Basically what they did was they said, we're really, really good at cost of production. And in beer, cost of production doesn't matter. The beer in a bottle at the time cost a cent, and you sold the bottle for a dollar. So they were great at the wrong thing. So Gordon Cairns at the time, it was, we actually need to be good at what matters. And in beer, revenue is what matters. So he said, we want to be world-class at sales and marketing. And he got a bloke called Phil Robertson to pick a team and say, we just want you to go and learn how to do best practice marketing. And so we basically went around the world for a year and a half and listened to, you know, the Budweiser's and the British Airways and the Marks and Spencer's and the Cadbury's and stuff, and said, okay, so how do you do marketing? And if you ask a marketer how they do something, you can't shut them up. So they tell you everything. And then you come back to Australia, you write it down, and you look like you're a genius just because you've listened to geniuses for like 18 months.
And that was, the mid-90s, this all, was it?
So that was 97, 98.
Yeah, wow.
But it was like...
It's halcyon days.
What a great trip, yeah.
So it's like somebody's given you a decent marketing training, and then they've said... Actually, I want you to stop for a second and just go and listen to all of the best people around in food marketing.
Yeah.
It was like awesome. And all we had to do was write it down. So look, if you do this, we can't guarantee that you'll succeed, but we're fairly certain you won't screw it up.
Yeah.
And that's really what best practice does, is it's always people that actually generate the brilliance. But if you go through a certain number of steps, your probability of screwing up goes very low.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've been at Australian Pork for 13 years now. How have you seen the marketing evolve in your time there?
The two big things that have changed in Australian Pork's marketing is, the first one is that when we looked around, because we're based in Canberra, we realised that all of the great food marketers in Australia are in Melbourne or Sydney. And I apologise to Brisbane and Perth, because there are some great ones there and I can probably name you. But the vast majority of food marketing folk are in Melbourne and Sydney. So we didn't have a pool to draw from. So we just hired really, really smart people and we trained them. That bit kind of changed the world in two ways. Because the first one is, if you have smart young people, they actually keep you alive and young mentally, because they keep telling you you're wrong, and unfortunately most of the time they're right and I'm not. So I think that was one big change. And the second big change is a big change if you look at it over the last decade, but it's not a big change if you look at it year by year. And what we ended up doing was we ended up saying, well, the consumer insight is this. So we think that pork makes everyday meals more interesting. That's what we believe. And we found different ways of talking about that, whether it's how to cook it or versatility or it's good for you. But essentially, those messages have been very similar. But how you deliver that message, like I'm not a big fan of leading with a media idea. And the reason I'm not a big fan of it is that if you send something down a pipe, whatever the pipe is, that's crap, it's still crap. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a great message, then you can evolve your media mix. And if you looked at the media mix in 2010, it would have been 85% TV and 15% radio. It's probably now about 55% TV, 20% radio, and 35% of either social, digital, catch-up TV. We're doing outdoor at the moment, because outdoor is really great value for money at the moment, because everybody said, actually, nobody's going shopping. Well, actually, some people are going shopping, and now most of the country's going shopping, but outdoor's down 50% in terms of ad spend. But people are still going to Westfields everywhere apart from Victoria. So, yeah, so those would be the big two things that we've injected a whole bunch of youthful intellect, and we've evolved media mix over a decade.
I'm going to pick up on something just before we get into another topic, because, you know, obviously you have doubled down a bit on marketing during COVID, and there's not many brands that have had the courage to do that. I'm keen to hear what you've learned from doing that.
Well, so one of the very few benefits of being old is you have actually been through a recession before. And so when I went through the last recession, I was working for Cadbury's on Cadbury's Fingers. And Cadbury's Fingers sales went through the roof just as I turned up as marketing manager. And it's like, oh, it's all me. Obviously, clearly.
Great timing.
Nothing to do with me. But people weren't going out for dinner. But mums were buying, and it was mums at the time because it was like 9 million years ago, were buying Fingers as a treat, because you weren't getting a cake for your birthday, or you weren't going out to the Beef Eater grill for your birthday. So it was just a small treat that was relatively cheap, but literally sales went through the roof. So my personal experience of recessions are, this is an opportunity, not a threat. And that's really what we're seeing here. So one of the things that's happened for us was, at the time, actually, I'd just moved out of marketing and was helping some of the other people in the pork team do their stuff. And I handed over the reins to a lady called Unbi Lee and said, look, you just babysit marketing for 6 months. And then COVID happened. And really irritatingly, she just said to the team, we probably need to change everything we're doing. And 2 weeks later, everything was different. I'm thinking, that looked effortless.
Yeah. How did she do that?
I'm not really very keen on you anymore. So one of the things that we did when she when the team had helped her pivot everything was say, well, actually, if everybody else isn't doing something and everybody's at home, why would we not be talking more frequently and more loudly? Mm. And because, as I said, because I'm old and I've been through it before, we went to the board and said, we actually think that it would be a better idea to go up rather than down. So instead of, we used to have, are you familiar with the extra share of voice thing, about if you have extra share of voice, you build share, at least in the long term? So we were about plus 7% extra share of voice last year, so 2019. I think we're plus 14 this year. And I suspect we'll be around plus 20 by the end of the year. And it literally is, we're now growing pork's demand, if you measure it in revenue growth in retail, faster than any other species. And I don't know if it's down to marketing, because I haven't got the disaggregation data yet. I can't have that until next year. But we're growing faster than everybody else, and we're spending more. And it kind of feels like, well, that's what the theory says is going to happen, so...
That's probably
all good.
Yes. And you talked earlier about disruption And when dinner was last disrupted, do you think we've just gone through a big dinner disruption in Uber Eats and home delivery and then the Marley Spoons and the HelloFreshes of the world?
So yes and no. And the yes bit is the business models of the Marley Spoons of this world are now significantly more robust than they were a year ago. However, I always have a little bit of a problem with disruption on the basis that people say Uber disrupted taxis. But that taxis is not a category. Travelling by car is a category, and still 99% of car travel happens by you driving your own car. So you can disrupt industries, but you don't really tend to disrupt categories that much. And so people think about Amazon as, hey, this is going to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. If you listen to Jeff Bezos, he'll be saying, I'm still 2% of sales. Like, is that real? So, do I believe that their business models are significantly more robust? Yes, and for two reasons. One is they've got a lot more customers, and those customers are a lot more regular. So, much better business model. But is it going to change how people eat? For some people, but not for most.
And what sort of advice would you give a young marketer coming up? What sort of mentor advice would you give them at the start of their career?
Well, so two things. The first one is, if they're not going to listen to you, you aren't going to listen to them. So, there needs to be a mutual respect. And the second thing is, pick somebody who's going to tell you stuff you don't want to hear. And I would say that it becomes increasingly important the older you get. Because I don't know about you, but when I was 30, I thought I knew everything. And when I was 40, not quite so sure.
The cracks start to appear.
And now I'm 50, I'm thinking, I don't know anything at all. But fortunately, I'm surrounded by all these young people that do. But in seriousness, I think that getting somebody else's perspective who's close enough to you to know you, but separate enough to be objective. You just can't,
the honesty,
you just can't replace that.
And the protein market's changing quite rapidly. Lab-based meats, plant-based meat, what are you doing? What's your innovation cycle, or are you thinking about innovation with your distributors?
Well, so I'd go back to the Uber thing. So the numbers are different from the media. So if I read about Facebook in 2009, I would have had roughly 90% of marketing publications saying positive things about Facebook. But in 2009, Facebook's actual revenue growth from advertising was actually really fast, because it was coming from a low base, but it was actually still really small. And that's really where lab-based meat and plant-based protein is at the moment. At the moment, it's less than 0.2%, and it's growing, last time I looked, at 9% year on year. So if it carried on at that rate, it's going to be less than 1% when I die. The reality is that it's not going to grow at that rate for that period of time. Every now and again, even I will eat a vegetarian meal. That doesn't mean that I don't love pork, or I don't love beef, or I don't love chicken. It just means that it's a choice. And I think that there are really successful people and really successful companies actually embrace the difference rather than try and shun it. And so I think the worst thing you can do is go out and argue with those people. You're much better off picking your narrative and sticking with it.
Get some pork on your fork. Totally synonymous with Australian pork, and very recognisable aspect of the organisation's identity. You've now released a new slogan of On Your Forks during COVID. How has Australian pork managed to keep the slogan relevant for so long?
Actually, the story of that, because certainly our new CEO, when she joined a year ago, said, "Oh, you're Mr. Pork." And I said, "Actually, I'm not. I just stole it." So in the late 80s or early 90s, the pork organisation at the time did get some pork on your fork. And when pork offered me the job back in 2007, all of my Australian mates said, "Get some pork on your fork." And being an English person and having turned up in 2000, I said, "What on earth are you talking about?" And they said, "No, in Australia, get some pork on your fork is a real thing." And when I joined, I thought, well, actually, that was kind of like qualitative, unprompted research. I will just check it out in part of the advertising research process. And basically, all the consumers said, we don't know why you stopped doing that. And when consumers are saying, not only do I recognize it, but I don't understand why you stopped, you start saying, yeah, this kind of feels like marketing people yeah. changing stuff because yes. marketing people want to change it. So that was really quite simple. That was just like marketing 101. You are not the customer. Don't kid yourself that you have any idea. Mm. Ask a customer. And they just told us to do that. So we did. How you've kept it relevant is, I don't think that keeping it relevant is that hard. It's really simple. It's really easy. It's actually quite well liked. It was quite well liked before we went anywhere near it to re-energize it in 2010. So, and I'm personally a big believer in consistency. So, the marketing people at Pork now will tell you that I'm not allowed anywhere near the marketing, which is probably a good thing. my role in marketing is to actually be an obstacle for inconsistency. Right. So. I kind of sit in partly as a brand guardian thing, which is saying, I absolutely want you to go away and play with stuff and twist it and see what catches the light. You should do that. But if you want to change, get some pork on your fork, or if you want to change the color from pink, or you want to stop calling it pork, I probably will going to need some evidence that this is going to give us a significantly better long-term return than the one we're getting. Because at the moment, the returns don't look awful.
So where do you see Australian pork in 5 years?
Right, so where we want to be in 5 years is we want to be the most preferred meat, because there's no point in aiming low. So most preferred meat doesn't mean that we are consumed more than chicken, but it does mean we're liked more than chicken.
Yeah.
And so if you can do that domestically, you probably have to make products which are great for every day, like sausages and mince, but you probably need to work your way towards a wagyu of pork, whatever that ends up being labelled. And if you can do that, then that has a double whammy, because it's not only a benefit for Australians, but it's also a benefit internationally, because the niches that occur in markets are actually pretty the same regardless of which country you look at. So BMWs get sold in lots of countries for a reason. There's still only 3 Rolls Royces sold in each country for a reason, but the kind of people that buy them, pretty similar.
Mm. Yeah.
Peter Hayden, feels like I'm about to say this is your life.
Where's the big blue red book?
Thank you so much. I mean, you know, you're one of the most experienced packaged goods marketers and food marketers in the country. Great to have this conversation. It was a really interesting conversation.
It was,
really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the Marketing Commute.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Marketing Commute. Thanks to our guest, Peter Hayden from Australian Pork, to my co-hosts, Andrew Baxter and Carmen Becker, to our producers, Wing Yu and Frankie McGrath, the studios here at the University of Sydney Business School, and to Visual Domain, our new partner for Season 3. You can find The Marketing Commute on all good podcast networks, and you can read more detailed show notes and get links from each episode to find out more about our guests and the presenters at the website, themarketingcommute.com. We'll see you next time.